Welcome back to the podcast. My guest today is Erica Smith. She is known in the social media realm as Alaska Outdoor Girl, and you may have heard her on the Alaska Wild Project episode. Was it 2 weeks ago 40. That you were on there?
Yep, 2 weeks ago.
Excellent. Thanks for being on here.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Thanks for having me.
So we talked just briefly off air about skiing. You said you just got off the trail or the slopes?
Off the trails. So I live in Soldotna, and we have a really nice cross-country trail system out here. It's about 12 miles of trails that go all over around one of the local schools. It used to be Skyview High School. And yeah, I got about 5 miles in today, so that was great.
Nice. I had never been to Soldotna until this summer, and went up there for the honeymoon, and it was a cool area, kind of a long drive. You definitely feel like a separation once you get past Girdwood. Actually, once you get out of Anchorage, you feel like you're back in Alaska. And then you get to Girdwood, then you get out on the peninsula, and then you kind of go down into that flatland. It's pretty sweet. But I was kind of surprised at how Soldotna looked like it could have been anywhere down south, with kind of like the stores that are recognizable, the big spot, big box stuff. But then you see the Kenai River, and it's like, okay, we're back in Alaska.
Yeah. So we do have the Sportsman's Warehouse here, which does make it sound, you know, seem a little bit more metro. But that's about it. We don't have a Target or, TJ Maxx or anything like that. So still pretty small town, but yeah, the Kenai really separates it out. Yeah. Now, was Soldotna your destination, or were you on your way through on the way to Homer?
We went, what did we do? We got, the first 5 nights we did an Airbnb cabin right outside of Kasilof, because we wanted to do fly fishing for kings. That was kind of the main thing. And then we were going to go up to Cooper Landing to fish the upper Kenai. Yep. And I think 2 days before the honeymoon, that that person canceled on us. And so we had to rebook the second half of our honeymoon, and they didn't have anything available in Cooper Landing. So we had to go to, some place on the way to Seward that's on a lake. That has nothing there. Yes, Moose Pass.
On Trail Lake.
And that was not nearly as cool as Cooper Landing.
Moose Pass is very beautiful.
Yep.
I like Moose Pass. Not a lot going on there.
No. No. we it was a hotel that we ended up staying at. And in the hotel, and that's just a kind of a far drive. You're not like right on the Kenai. That's kind of what we wanted to do. Have a, 5 to 10 minute run to the Kenai or something like that. So in Moose Pass, when we were there, it's a much longer drive. And we go to our hotel, we check in, and there's no coffee maker. There's no fridge. And we thought, at least throw a coffee maker. And if there's no coffee maker, there's no fridge. All right. Well, we went to the front desk of the hotel, and there's not really a front desk, and then there was no continental breakfast or anything. I'm sounding like I'm super high maintenance. I live in Ketchikan. I'm not coming in from, but it was just, it's a hotel for 100 and whatever a night. Thought, throw a stale prepackaged pastry at me, or something.
Yeah,
but
peanut butter crackers,
something, or at least have a coffee maker in there so I can make my own coffee in the morning and then drive somewhere else that has stuff. But
yeah, Moose Pass is rough, and I always tell people, don't stop for coffee when you're going through Moose Pass. I did one time, and because I traveled to Seward actually quite a bit, and I regret it to this day.
Yeah, it's too bad, because you want to eat those little tiny towns in between. Oftentimes there's some really cool places to visit, but that was not it's not the case there in Moose Pass. But I don't know. It's the way it was. So yeah, we spent some time there, but we fished the lower part of the Kenai, fished the Kasilof with everybody else with our fly rods. Well, we had fly rods. No one else had fly rods on the Kasilof. Got a guide on the Kenai. Ate at the two breweries that we knew of in Soldotna, the St. Elias, which had the good pizza. Mm-hmm. And then was a Kenai River Brewing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They had really good wings.
Yeah. I like your boneless wings.
I was happy with that. So check those boxes.
Those are our claims to fame.
Yeah. The nice thing about it is they complement each other. You don't have, you know, the same thing. It's just like not just a burger joint and another burger joint. It was good. I like that. It's it was quality. So yeah, that was the trip, and then we spent one night in Anchorage and kind of walked around there and went and saw Daniel at the Anchortown Dogs and saw Jack at Double Shovel. So it was cool to meet those guys and hang out a little bit. So fun trip, and it was good. Did you grow up in Saldana?
I did. I actually grew up out in Sterling, which is about 10 miles east of Saldana. And I went to Saldana High School and, grew up my whole life here on the Kenai Peninsula.
Stars, right? Saldana Stars, is that right?
The So High Stars, yeah.
So High Stars. That's good. That's good. Did you ever feel a need to leave? Did you ever want to leave? Like, why did you, how did you end up there?
I need to leave Saldana.
Saldana or Alaska or anything?
I did. When I was 18 years old, I moved down to Dallas-Fort Worth for 4 years. I went to college down there. And I think at 18, I don't know a smart 18-year-old. No offense to any 18-year-olds that listen to this, but you know, I just wasn't very smart at 18 years old. And I was like, I got to get out of here. Got to get out of this small town. You know, I'm going to go live my life somewhere else. And I did. And I moved down to Dallas-Fort Worth. And, you know, I actually like the area. There's a lot of fun stuff to do down there. I'm a big sports fan. I actually worked for the Dallas Mavericks down there. And it was great. You know, but then I moved back in 2008 to Alaska. I graduated high school in 2004, moved back in 2008. And just since then, I've really found my love for the outdoors. And, you know, it's so nice here. The pace in Alaska is just unmatched. It's so relaxing up here, and it's just a perfect place to live away from all of the hustle. And I actually feel like I'm in control and living my life up here intentionally. And even when I go visit cities down south, I feel like I'm losing parts of myself when I'm driving on a freeway or, you know, sitting in traffic or like stressing out over getting to that fifth lane over on the left because I have to exit in 4 miles.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah. I went to college at University of Arizona in Tucson just to get out. Uh-huh. And then my first job out of college was teaching in California. And I knew that I wasn't going to end up there, but another year passes and another year passes. And I didn't really have, I would go home for every summer. Like, as soon as the school year was over, like the next day I was on a plane to go home, and I was up in Kluwak, here in Southeast. I was there until the day or two before I had to report back. So I was there the entire summer and just fishing and outdoors and camping. And then during the year, every weekend I could, I was going up into the mountains in Sierra Nevada. I mean, they're beautiful. There's nowhere in the world like Yosemite. It's just beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, Half Dome is unbelievable, but there's so many people. And then, you know, you go, I made the mistake once of heading west out of where we lived down to, through San Jose to hike these mountains by the Bay Area. Beautiful hike. You look down, look out to the ocean. That's great. But then you get so rewound as you're driving back home. So any sort of relaxation or whatever that you got from the hike, and
it's over.
It just for years and years and years. And then finally I moved back and I thought, oh man, like I was in danger of becoming a lifer, and it was just scary. But now that you're back and, you know, more mature, and then you just see everything, there's so many more opportunities, and it's, you can just live it on a different level, and it feels so much more fulfilling and part of the identity that I maybe took for granted when I was younger. Did you feel some of that too?
Oh, for sure. You know, when I lived in Texas, you know, I was always the girl from Alaska, you know, and people just couldn't fathom it. And, you know, do you live in an igloo? You know, do you see polar bears all the time? You know, that kind of question, because people just, they have no idea. Their minds are just blown, you know, and it got a little annoying at times because it was like, really, you know, like, come on. And, but now, like you said, you don't realize when you're young, the value of actually what's here. And how it actually, it's really started to make sense to me lately, how it is the last frontier. It is the last wild place in America, right? And the value that we have being here, that we can go places that maybe nobody's ever stepped a foot on. It's just really exciting.
Yeah. I'm teaching, Adventure Survival Lit, and we just finished up, Into the Wild. And it's so hard for the kids to understand why Chris McCandless would do what he did and end up in Alaska. Yeah. I'm thinking, you know, it's for people who live in an urban setting, it's there's nowhere else to go anymore. Like, and so Alaska is the last place if you want to do something that's kind of bold and get to some of that unmatched terrain in the same way that people went west. And then when there was no more west, they went north, you know, the gold rush and all that sort of stuff. Now there's no other rush. There's no thing to go and pursue and just leave everything behind. It's just it's a vacation or it's a cruise. Or if you're McCandless, you know, you just kind of hitchhike and you're totally unprepared, but
right.
You know, humans aren't meant to just hang out in the metaverse, you know, and so it's not surprising that people want to do that, but it's tough for high school kids to understand and realize that there's people that want to do that.
Yeah. So adventure, what did you call the class? Adventure Lit?
Adventure Survival Lit, yeah.
Adventure Survival Lit. So what grade is that? What year is that?
Juniors and seniors.
Okay. I went to college for my degree is actually in education with secondary education specialization in English, and I was going to be an English teacher. So interesting.
Yeah. I got my degree in journalism. So I always said that I was kind of a journalist who happened to teach English, and man, the textbook game was not great. So one of the things I love about Ketchikan is the opportunity to teach those sort of classes. So I teach science fiction lit, adventure survival lit, and just you can connect with the kids much more. And it's not. We have folklore and fairy tales and war and remembrance, and the educational experience is so much different when you're not just this pacing guide and this textbook and this. You know, the only option you have as a junior senior is either regular or AP. Like that's not a recipe for kids being really excited about school.
No, it's not. That was the recipe when I was in school, was regular or AP.
Yeah.
And it was Moby Dick and the Scarlet Letter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's rough. That is rough.
It was.
So
very cool.
One of the things that when I moved back, that was something that was definitely on my mind, and actually my principal, when I told him, I said, I'm going to move back to Alaska, he said, well, now you're going to have to meet someone online. And I was like, what the heck, man? Like, that was the first thing out of his mouth, rather than like, oh man, you know, it was just, I moved back for family health reasons. My mom had some health issues, so I was moving back to kind of take care of her. But like, his first words are, you have to meet your wife online, because he knew I was going back to an island in Southeast Alaska. And then I was like, maybe, you know, like, Kulwak doesn't have a, you know, extensive dating pool, population of 700, and Ketchikan on a different island has 12,000, but I mean, there was a lot of things I love to do. So I didn't really worry about that so much. And you and I talked a little bit off air about this, and I kind of prompted the question. So I try to be as not awkward as possible, but, how have you dealt with the odds are good, but goods are odd, being a woman in Alaska?
Yeah, it's been difficult, I will say, in some instances. So I'm single currently, but I'm open-minded, and I try to stay pretty open-minded and pretty resilient when it comes to dating. I will say, like, personally, my mindset is I'm looking really for just like a partner in life, like an adventure partner, you know, and not everybody wants the same thing. Traditionalism might say like, oh, I want a woman to, you know, be in the kitchen and raising the kids and, you know, all those type of things. And, you know, that's great. And, you know, that could be, some of that could be in my future, but, you know, it's just, it hasn't been, just haven't made that connection yet. And somebody that is kind of running the same pace that I'm running. And I think that that could be a little bit overwhelming for some people. But yeah, I'm just trying to stay open-minded about it, be cautious, you know, because I think that relationships are dangerous too. Mm-hmm. And, but I'm cautiously optimistic. And my main, the main thing that I really wanted to do though, as well, is just to stay gentle about it and to stay soft about it and to not get bitter about things that don't work out. Because I do think that, you know, even if you're on an island, I do think that things can work out for the best. So I'm pretty optimistic when it comes to those type of things.
Yeah. My brother got married. It was having kids, and then I was just notoriously single. You know, I spent my summers up here, so that's not really, I wasn't really meeting anybody. And my mom and dad would ask if I'm seeing anybody, and I'm like, no. And so I could feel that they were like uncomfortable, but I got past that sort of, you know, is anybody going to want me type thing. It was just weird to see in California. It was like, it did seem like there were people who didn't have anything going on. And so because of that, and this is not all people, I don't want to sound judgmental or anti whatever, California, right. But it was, I don't have anything go on. The next step after high school is marriage, kids, and then that's how you validate your existence. And to just have other stuff going on, you know, yeah, that's fun. And then you can have just a good, fulfilling life. And when something happens, it does. And my wife now, mm-hmm, happened to be visiting a friend 3 summers ago on Prince of Wales. So I happened, yeah, to meet my wife there, but I swore I would never do long distance relationships. But I met her, and she was just getting back from hiking the Chilkoot Trail and kayaking Glacier Bay. And I thought, oh my gosh, who's this?
She's awesome.
Yeah. And it, yeah, and it just kind of happened. But I think there's that, you know, someone who has stuff together, it's just, it's awesome. Do you feel that, and she talked about this a little bit, that some of her and her friends, she's a PhD student, she's about ready to finish it up, that, mm-hmm, some men, many men, whatever, and this could be like a Wyoming thing or a down south thing, are intimidated by strong, confident women. So if you have a woman who's a hunter and just gets after it and lives life to the fullest, that can be, you know, intimidating for men to deal with. You don't seem like a hardened feminist, angry at men type. Like, how are you? Have you seen some of that?
A little bit. Yeah. I've experienced a little bit of that. Most of the time that comes from not necessarily being passionate about the outdoors, right? About like fishing and hunting and those type of things, because a lot of guys are like, oh, cool, you're into that type of thing. You know, that's kind of been the goods are odd situation in those particular instances. But yeah, I have experienced a little bit of, I am a very tenacious person. I'm also just very goal oriented. I found a lot of success at my job, and you know, I do pretty well, like, for myself, and I like to do things well. I like excellence, and, you know, I have high standards, and I have high standards for the people that I surround myself with too. So I have personally experienced a couple of relationships with guys that just, they didn't want that, you know, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. For them. You know, it's not, they weren't looking for somebody like me. They were looking for somebody like, you know, I don't know, one of the I would maybe not one of the Golden Girls, bad example, but you know, like somebody back from an old TV show.
Yeah.
I Love Lucy, something like that, you know, and that's just not me. So I think that I won't make any blanket statements that say that, you know, like I or people like me, women like me are intimidating to all men. I won't make that generalist statement, but I think that for some, yeah, absolutely. I think it can be intimidating. And I think guys could be like, yeah, that's not what I want.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I think that sometimes it can be, people can make assumptions about women that are tenacious and that do have goals and, you know, are kind of, you know, really, I guess the word intimidating. But if you just like ask a question and like get to know somebody, you know, you could find something completely different.
Yeah. Yeah, guys, when I first asked you the question a couple of days ago, I thought, man, I feel it's an awkward question. I feel that maybe I'm not even the person who should be asking it, but I haven't really heard much in the like journalism podcast sort of realm about that and how people are, and I'd never even thought about it until my wife made a comment and some of her friends in the PhD program. We have these very smart, very driven, you know, non-angry types who are like, oh, I never even thought about what that would be. So, again, blanket statements, I try not to make them. I'm kind of tiptoeing around the subject, but I thought it was kind of an interesting thing and just wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear from, like I was telling you, I'd be interested to hear the perspective between or from some of your like younger male listeners, you know, some of the guys that are single that are, you know, that are my age, right, and are not looking for something serious, or you know, or they're not, you know, interested in stronger women or whatever, however you want to say it, I don't know, but like what their take is. Like you had mentioned, you were just busy living your life and you just weren't, it wasn't a priority of yours, you know. So
yeah. Yeah,
it's cool to talk to people and to hear their perspectives as well.
Yeah, I think what I saw was like the value in like a co-provider. Sometimes when you throw the words like be a leader of the household, that makes it sound like some old, you know, archaic, toxically masculine, whatever. But it doesn't mean it's at the expense of someone else. Like you can be co-providers. I want to be a provider. I want to be a leader, but that doesn't mean that Abby can't be. And it was easy to see the value that was brought by, you know, she's into the same stuff I am. And sometimes we, you know, disagree about elk strategy or something like that. But I'm thinking, man, we're out here hunting elk together. You know, she doesn't want a bugle right now. And I do, cause I practiced it and I watched YouTube stuff, but like, this is a good problem to have, man. Like this is not a power struggle. So, yeah. I think that's a cool thing for me to realize, but it did take a little bit when she shot her first doe. I haven't taken an elk before and just this, she's such a go-getter. It is kind of, I got to stay on top of my game here cause she gets after it. And that's good to have that mutual sort of challenging back and forth rather than like, there's the clear, I have to be this in the relationship. It's nice to be able to just have that, but yeah.
Yeah. And you mentioned it, you know, I think it's like the expectations that, you know, we've grown up with, or that society puts on something that says, okay, now here's the next box that you check and here's what this looks like. And, you know, but that's only what the past has said, right? That's what we have to learn from, you know, the past couple hundred years, and which is just a short time. But you know, the traditional family, you know, women, they're getting into some pretty cool stuff, and they're doing some really awesome things. And I think that we just all have to transition together. You know, when I was a kid, you know, my mom wouldn't have dreamed to go hunting with my dad, like at all. She would have hated it. And, it shocked my dad. I go hunting with my dad now. And like, we have snow machines and like, we hang out and he's like, I never knew how cool you were. And so I'm like, it's okay. I'm not offended, you know, but I think that it's just it's a culture shift and it's a transition for women because, you know, we haven't been really invited to do those things. Mm-hmm. And I kind of mentioned this on the Alaska Wild Project podcast too. Like it's a little harder for women to get into things like that, to get into the hyper-masculine outdoors. And, like, it's not an open invitation. It's, you know, a lot of it is based on tenacity and some of it's based on luck, you know, like if somebody just inviting you to go one day and then you getting to go. Mm-hmm. But I just think that it's just a transition. And I think that, women in the outdoors right now are kind of at the forefront of that transition for women. Like you do see, and right, wrong, or indifferent, right? But you see a lot of women being brand ambassadors for hunting companies and stuff now, and it's cool to see the ones that actually get out and do it.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that the industry recognizes that women are interested in this, and that there's an opportunity to just be welcoming. Mm-hmm.
So, do you think that kind of the anti-hunting sentiment that that's down south more so than up here, do you think that disproportionately impacts women because that is it's an opportunity for, you know, family bonds, for individual growth, and do you think that's a hindrance about this positive movement?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that in some cases, definitely. I think in some cases, maybe not. It's hard to say. But I think that, you know, if we're just addressing the anti-hunting, you know, sentiment, I just think there's a lack of exposure around the whole thing and that we have an opportunity to really present it better. We just have to do a better job.
Yeah.
At presenting what it is and why it is and not make it look as barbaric, even though it does have definitely a little bit of, you know, barbaric traits to it. Like it's a little bit barbaric, but you know, we need to present it in a better way. And I think it's a challenge that I'm definitely willing to step up to. Mm-hmm.
I had a student in California write a self-assessment essay about the thing she loved to do most in her life was to go elk hunting with her dad. And I thought, this is awesome. And almost in the next sentence, she said, then it's very important that her friends don't find out because her friends were cheerleaders. She was a cheerleader. She kind of fit that type. And I just thought, oh man, like that mm-hmm. connection, that father-daughter connection, you know, a present father, you're doing real things. Like what is more empowering, you know, for a young girl to become a young woman, that this, you can do this stuff, and then yeah. to have it or have to hide it from her friends because she's ashamed or afraid they're going to judge her because she does something that's deemed weird. It just stuck with me. I saw her as a senior, and she said, because at the school I was at had 1,800 kids, so sometimes once they're out of your class, like you don't really see them too much. But she said she ended up telling her friends, and there was no big deal. And I thought, perfect, good. That's what I told you when you were a sophomore. I said, if they're really your friends, then it's not going to matter. But
right.
Yeah, like those connecting points are so, so great, you know, and having kids up here and talk about how they went hunting and you know, kids, boys and girls just sharing, hey, Mr. Lund, I got a buck over the weekend. Just how excited they are to be able to talk about something that's real that they did over the weekend is just such a great part of living here and then part of their growing up experience.
Oh yeah, for sure. We're so lucky that we have that here, you know, down south, they have just like a lot of whitetail. Like that's the big sport, you know, but here it's so diverse and, it's so cool just to have that heritage and that, and the opportunity to just grow up Alaskan,
yeah.
You know, it's so special. And I think that it's a miss that we don't champion that more, when the kids are young.
Yeah. So transitioning off that a little bit to something maybe easier to talk about, don't have to tiptoe tiptoe around or me worried about saying something dumb if I haven't already. I want to talk about skiing a little bit. My wife has a pair of skis and she's got skins and we've done some backcountry stuff, but I don't own a pair. What can you tell me about skiing and what's your favorite time to go, favorite way to do it? As a recreation, as a whatever, what do you got for skiing?
Oh man, I have a lot of stuff about skiing. So I will say that I'm not a gear expert when it comes to skis. I'm the type of person that I get some basics and I wear them until they're worn down to nothing, and I just use them and use them and use them. So I got into cross country skiing 5 or 6 years ago, and I will say this for the rest of my life, that it changed winter in Alaska for me. Cross-country skiing is such an easy way to get outside every single day. You don't have to have beautiful trails like Salteshi Trails that I have here in Solana. You don't have to have that. You can go on a lake, you know, as long as you don't make me go through all the safety protocols of being on a lake, but you can go skiing around a lake and it's so easy. And it's so beautiful and fun, and you just get out there and you just glide across the snow, or, you know, you can even, I saw somebody going down the sidewalk the other day, and I'm like, oh, don't you know that we have these nice trails here? But, yeah, so I guess cross-country skiing is my day-to-day, and I ski on classic cross-country skis. They're 188 centimeters and 64 millimeters wide, so they're long and skinny. Is the short of it. And they have the heel that doesn't click down, right? Or the heel that's not stationary. So you're basically just like gliding across and your heel comes up across the snow on both sides. And gosh, it's a full body workout. And it just has allowed me to get outside every day in the summer and, or I mean in the winter. And that's been incredible. So cross country skiing is my number one, just because it's my most common. My number two is backcountry skiing. And by that, I just mean like backcountry, cross country skiing. So I like to get out on like the lakes and stuff locally. Sometimes I'll have a little jet sled and a harness and I can pull a jet sled behind me and go out and do some ice fishing. So I like to do that. So I like to pack up all my stuff and haul all my stuff out to a lake and do some ice fishing. And that's fun because you're out in the backcountry and it's so quiet out there. You don't have to do a lot of climbing, like alpine backcountry skiing, you know, but it's still just a great way to get out and get some exercise, get some different terrain, and kind of feel like you're somewhere that you're not supposed to be, which is what I love about it the most. Like, I'm on skis, I have a sled with me, I have a bunch of stuff that's not meant to be out here with me, and it's just really, it feels really adventurous, and it's just kind of a rush getting out there and settling in. I have a little ice hut that I take with me.
Nice.
I'm settling in and just getting it done, so that's fun.
Do you have the alpine backcountry ones with the skins too?
I do. Yeah, right. I just got those.
Well, what did those run? And sometimes the best source are the people who don't necessarily know a lot about a lot. It just know enough about what you need to know. So yeah. How did that, did you get stuff used? Did you buy it new? How did you do the alpine version?
Yeah. So I will say that, and I'll just, you know, I'll admit this guiltily, I guess. But I like things to match. And so I bought my stuff new because I bought my boots to match my skis, to match, you know, my skins and blah, blah, blah.
Nice.
And I got, so I got a bonus last year in February at work. And I knew that the bonus was coming, and I was like, with this bonus, I'm going to buy myself like a nice backcountry setup. And so I did. I bought it in February and March. And I just got myself like, I I did some research on beginner, intermediate, and advanced, like the length of your skis, the flexibility of your boots, where you're going to be skiing, those type of things. And so I made my decisions on that. And I hate researching. I'll just say that right now. Like, I absolutely hate it. And it's difficult when you're breaking into a new sport. And backcountry skiing or backcountry snowboarding or split boarding, it's a big, big sport. It's like fly fishing. Like, it's just, it's huge because there are so many moving pieces to it. And so I just got my Avi gear like about a month ago, and I still have to get my Avi course done. I've done a couple of virtual courses because that's so important, because you need to be able to, I mean, the scary side of it is you need to be able to dig somebody out if you are going with them in avalanche terrain, which is kind of all over the Chugach range, which is where I'll be skiing. So yeah, it took a ton of research, and I hate researching because I'm just a doer. I like to do. I would rather somebody like look at me and be like, okay, you're a beginner. Here's what you need. You don't want stiff boots. You want this, and here's why you want it, and da 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 da. You know, but instead I had to like painstakingly go through all of the reading and all of the blogs and all of the recommendations and figure out how I did it, and probably can't even remember half of it, but
yeah.
So that's how I got set up with my backcountry setup.
Did you go into somewhere and buy the stuff, or did you buy it online? Because I would think that buying like the boots online would be super scary.
It was scary. I went and I tried on boots. And the back and ski boots, you know, they've got weird sizing, like the Mondo, what is it, Mondo sizing that they call it. And so I went in and I tried on boots. I tried them on at REI. Where else did I try them on? I tried them on at a couple different places in Anchorage, I think. And they were all pretty ugly, the ones that they had. And so I found a pair online that I liked. Because again, I'm picky about colors, and so I picked out a pair online that I liked, but I went locally and tried them on.
Nice. There's not a spot around here to try them on, which is always scary about everything. We don't have the nearest Sportsman's is in Juneau, but you know, that's a hour and a half Alaska Airlines flight, so we're not doing that for the weekend. But
right,
you would think that wouldn't be too expensive a flight, but they'll get you. They'll get you on that.
Yeah.
The thing is with Alaska,
though, if you've got the 5,000, isn't it 5,000 miles to get, you know, like you can get around on it?
Yeah, and then companion fare. We try to use the companion fare for something big. But yeah, I definitely like to.
I actually have two of those.
You have two companion fares?
I have two of those Bank of America cards because I've got family that lives outside.
Oh, perfect.
So I'm forever spending my companion fare on everybody else.
Yeah, that is such a great deal. It used to be free, which is awesome, and then it was what, $50? Now it's $100, but still, that's you're still saving a ton. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I definitely want to make a move on that. We have a couple trails that you can go up. We don't have a lot of, you know, just a lot of snow and trails in town that stay snowy. Like right now there's snow on it, but it's going to warm up and probably a week and a half or so start raining and get back to that 37 degrees and rainy. That's kind of our winter program down here, which is, it's sometimes nice to see the sun, even if it is pretty cold.
Yeah. What mountains do you guys have up there, behind Ketchikan?
We just have, I don't even know if it's called a range because it's just a small little island. But we got a couple of mountains that get into like 3,500. Like there's plenty of alpine, and some people will take they'll take snow machines up and then hike on up and then do some skiing. And based on the weather fluctuations, and things can get pretty dangerous with the snow. And so some of my buddies have been in on some rescues that have been pretty rough, but you know, that when the skiing is good here, it can be pretty awesome, but it's just pretty short, and Yeah, not real big. A lot of people have snow machines, but the skiing thing is kind of a, you know, maybe a dozen or so people I think I know of that that get after it, and it's two or three times a year.
Oh wow!
Most of the people either go up to Eagle Crest in Juneau, and others used to go down to Smithers. There was a big contingent of people who would go down to Smithers. I don't know, five or six families would just pretty much, it was almost like they were chartering one of the Alaska Marine Highway ferries. Yeah. Just go down there, take their vehicles, drive to Smithers, and, you know, rent something for a week during winter break. And it sounded super fun. But now with COVID, that hasn't happened. But
right.
So,
Yeah, you fit a lot of gear on those ferries.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When you do go fishing, are there any lakes around there that you also fish during the summer when it's nice out?
Yes, we have, like, if you zoom in on the Kenai Peninsula, there's like hundreds of lakes. And what I had a good time with one of my friends one winter and summer. We just went into the wildlife refuge, and we just carried a little inflatable raft with us and just fished as many lakes as we could, just to see how many of those lakes had trout in them, and trout and char. And there's just naturally existing a lot of, like, they're little, but it's still fun just to find out for yourself, like, all these lakes, you know, out in the middle of nowhere that have little fish in them that you can just, it's just kind of an adventure. And they all look different, which is crazy just because of, like, the minerals and stuff in the water. Hmm. So sometimes we get these little rainbows and they're like golden almost. They have like a golden copper sheen just because of the minerals in the water. So it's just a little crazy. But yeah, so ice fish those, and then in the summer, you know, you can get out there and, like, pack rafts and stuff, and because there's, like, little trails all over the place, and just go from lake to lake to lake. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that north of whatever road that is, up by, I don't know, like, east of Nikiski, I think, or somewhere around there. Like, just, I should probably get my Onyx out here. I want to have the computer, but there are tons and tons of lakes everywhere.
Swanson River Road
looks pretty sweet. What about Skelak or Testamina freeze over? I would assume that the Skelak would have some decent fishing if it does freeze over.
Yes, I don't. You know, I don't really recreate out on Skelak or Testamina for that matter. You know, I tend to hit up, I guess, the little, for lack of a better term, like little mom and pop lakes, and not the big ones. You know, Skelak and Testamina, they have currents that run through there, right? And they can just be a little bit dangerous. And I know that some people have done, like, some ice skating on Skelak, you know, and that's pretty cool if you can get there before. If it's been cold and there hasn't been any snow. And I do know that there's some pretty decent ice fishing in certain areas of Skelak, but I wouldn't be the pro to talk about those things. I kind of just dink around where I can just be out skiing and avoid the wind. That's one of the real bad things about Skelak, is the wind that comes through there is just treacherous. It's awful.
Yeah, just coming out of those mountains, it's got to be cold and strong. That's
oh, yeah. It's terrible. There's actually a book called The Winds of Skelak, and it's just known for just ripping through there. It's awful.
Do you feel, we kind of got this feeling, once you kind of drop down out of Cooper Landing, you know, and you get there, and you can take that left, and you can drive down the lower part of the upper Kenai, I guess, before it dumps into Skelak. But it does seem like there's a lot of area that you can't, like, really get to when it comes to either because of no roads or because of private land. Does it feel oddly open but still prohibitive with so much opportunity there, but you just can't get everywhere?
So I'm trying to think of like where you're talking about. So like when you come down out of the mountains and you're kind of in the flat area there, and you're just out there in the refuge.
Yeah. And you can't really drive all the way down. I guess it's probably a good thing, but it didn't look like there was just a trail that went all along the river so you could fish the whole Upper Kenai. You're just like wherever there was a pullout and stuff. And so you just feel like the fishing might, everyone's kind of in the same few spots, or did we just not fish it right?
Yeah. So the Kenai, the Upper Kenai specifically, there's a trail that kind of runs along the river, like kind of the whole way up there. But there are those little pullouts that are kind of the hot spots for people to go hike in, but it's not uncommon for people to hike like a couple miles once they pull off on those pull-offs, which I've done. And then, you know, if you're going to fish the whole upper, you know, it's typically you're in a drift boat and you're putting it up at the lake and then you're going all the way down to Jim's, which is right there on Skelack Lake Road, the east entrance. But yeah, it does seem if you don't know your way around, it can definitely seem really restrictive. But you just, once you get out there and you start looking around, there are places to walk and there are places to go, and just being mindful, you know, of where you're stepping and all those things. But it's, I personally don't feel like it's that restrictive.
Yeah. I think maybe it was more the perception of being in brown bear country. There was no brown bears on Prince of Wales where I grew up, and there's no brown bear in the Ketchikan area, so just being not used to them, it's different. So while I'm willing to get back further walking along the shore, and it seemed like some areas you couldn't really access the water because it was really brushy on the edges, and maybe this could have been because we're there in June, so we're thinking about bears, and then you even access the water, should you even step down off the bank into the water, is it going to be 5 feet right off the bat? So
That's a really good point, Jeff. Like when I'm fishing the Upper Kenai, it's typically in the spring or it's in the fall. I don't fish it a lot in the summer. And I've fished it in the winter as well. And in the winter, it's just, there's no brush and there's no bears, mm-hmm. right? So, right. In the summer, I stay well away from the Upper Kenai River. It's crazy. It's just not my jam in the summer. Pretty much nowhere on the Kenai is my jam in the summer.
Yeah. Another thing that we loved the experience. We had a good time catching rainbows and dollies, but that was just one of the things that, once you get it dialed in, you kind of figure out where to go. And if we had a raft, that would have been great too. But also, do you feel kind of, isolated do you get snowed in and going through that pass area by Cooper Landing? I mean, it's pretty... You're going up in some elevation. I'm sure that the roads aren't always in great shape. Do you feel kind of cut off from the rest of the world?
For sure. Yeah.
That might not be a bad thing.
And especially when you go through those little stretches where it's like avalanche area, don't stop. Don't stop. You don't have any cell phone service. Keep going. Blow through here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I carry my inReach with me now. Recently, I got it, I think a year ago, but I carry my inReach with me now all the time because I'm like, why not? With the no cell phone service through there. But, in the winter, it's funny. I was packing up my car the other day because I drive up to Anchorage a lot and I'm getting ready to drive up to Glen Allen. And, I was getting my emergency kit ready just to put in the back of my car. And I kind of laughed to myself and I was like, this is just something that I do because I know about that road, but what I'm actually doing is a little bit crazy. I've got flares in my emergency kit. I've got a shovel. I've got emergency blankets. I've got hot hand warmers. Sometimes I'll just throw like my little, my little MFR stove in there. If it's visible. I have a little action packer that's just got an emergency kit in it just in case, because you don't just do it for yourself either on that road. You do it for other people, because if you see somebody just freshly in the ditch, you know, you're going to need those flares to slow other people down. I mean, it's just a dangerous highway. There's no cell phone service, and, you know, you're just kind of taking your life in your hands on your way up to Anchorage or down from Anchorage in the winter.
I have an action packer now with a lot of the same sort of things, which is pretty funny, even though we can't drive very far around here. When I was in California, I had a Ford Focus, just a terrible little stick shift thing, and I would always have an emergency collared shirt just because where we wanted to golf had some sort of dress code standard, I could have my shorts and I could have my flip-flops, but I could have the collared shirt to golf, and I call it the emergency collared shirt. But now it's like, okay, this is real emergency stuff just in case. But yeah. What about Seward? Seward's got to feel totally cut off because there's really nothing else down there.
Seward is an interesting little town. It's beautiful. That's like one of my favorite places to fish out of is Seward. And honestly, the hiking there is just, you know, it reminds me of Southeast. And I really do love Southeast. I think it's just gorgeous down there. Just the rugged mountains and then the ocean. Seward, though, I mean, like, it's a tourist town, you know, the there's year-round residents and stuff, and, you know, that's all well and good, you know, just like there's all over Alaska, but they just really come alive in the summer, and, you know, feeling cut off, maybe not so much, but the thing that sucks is, like, when you go to Seward outside of, like, peak season, you know, Memorial Day through Labor Day, you know, it's like all the businesses are shut down, the good restaurants are shut down, you know, because everybody's either out of state or, you know, it's just not worth it for them to stay open. And that's like, honestly, that's like my least favorite thing about tourist towns in Alaska. It's just like everything shuts down and it just ticks me off.
Yeah. It makes it feel like it's almost not real. Like there shouldn't be a town here, but there is only because of tourists. And that's kind of one of the things that people lament about Ketchikan downtown is, you know, you have some of these jewelry stores that are owned by the cruise ships. And when the cruise ships are gone, they take the jewelry out and go down south. It's like, you don't have that the authentic waterfront of a fishing town has been replaced by this, you know, commercialized touristy type stuff. And then when it's not tourist season, you know, it's not, just doesn't have the same feel, but you know, it's what it is.
Totally. Yeah. That's how it is in Seward. That's how it is in Homer. Gosh, I feel like that's how it is like in Talkeetna. It's, you know, in all those little tourist trap towns in Alaska, you know, and I shout out to the people that keep your businesses open like year round, that live here, that endure the cold, that endure the slowness. Shout out to those people. Like, those people are my people.
For sure.
I love that. And I try to, you know, shop at those places, eat at those places, you know, anything I can do to support.
Yeah. Even if it's only 3 or so days a week, like, it makes total sense to be, it's going to be a Thursday through Sunday or Thursday through Saturday thing or Friday. Just, that's fine. You know, give us a chance to support you. And that's great. We understand it. But
let's get creative about it, at least, you know,
Yeah, that's the thing too. Like, it's going to be expensive. You know, like, you kind of know it's just expensive to operate a business there. And some of the other places too, like bookstores. We have a bookstore here in Ketchikan that the owner has talked about. People will come in and they'll look at some of the local books, and then they'll go on Amazon and they'll check the price and then order it online. And then like right in front of the owner. And like, oh, would you like this book?
No,
I'll get it on Amazon. Like, oh my gosh. Like, you might do that. Just pretend that you don't want it. You know, take the name down, pretend, and then leave, and they don't know. But to say, yes, I'm going to make
so
this.
Tacky.
Yeah, I'm on a cruise in Alaska, and I'm going to save $3 by getting it online rather than buy it from you. It's gross.
Yeah, it is gross. And I will say that when I, like, back to my backcountry skis, like, I was looking at REI and, like, box stores and stuff like that, you know, up in Anchorage. I wasn't looking at, you know, the smaller businesses.
Yeah.
Which, just for convenience, but, you know, if I was, you know, I go to actually Powder Hound to get my stuff serviced. And, you learn as you go along, but, yeah, just nothing blatant like that. Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah. Yeah. You can definitely doesn't mean that you have to buy everything local, but, you know, at least once in a while go out to eat or, you know, give some money, do a little bit to support the local. That's just, it's just how we live. And that's part of the reasons why the communities are so strong, is because people look out for each other. And that's,
for sure. You
know, it's even if you are Southeast versus, you know, up north, different areas, like, you're still Alaskan. And that's, mm-hmm. it's a bond that, outside of probably Texas, I'm not sure if anybody else, any other state has a similar sort of connectedness, which is just, it can be super, super healthy. And Alaska has a lot of problems, you know, especially rural, especially during the winter. But, you know, there's a lot of positive social things that you can get involved with during the winter.
Yeah, I will say, like, there's a couple of outdoor outfits up here, just like outfitter small businesses. And honestly, like, sometimes their help is so freaking rude. And, like, I don't like going into these stores, but I go in because they're ski shops in Soldotna. And I spend my money there because there's ski shops in Soldotna. And, you know, it's funny. So I think that the challenge is for both sides, right? For business owners, like, you know, love your locals. And for locals, love your business owners.
Yeah. How do you cope with the winters? I know you've talked about skiing, and it's kind of, it's been a game changer for you. Have you ever had a difficult time kind of dealing with the darkness, with the cold?
For sure. Every year. Every year I do. In January specifically. Because in December, you know, all the Christmas lights are up. It's so happy. We're Christmas shopping. And, you know, it's just Christmas music and everybody's going crazy, you know. And then January happens and the fireworks are all, you know, the fireworks are all, you know, shot off and everything is sad. And, you know, then it's winter for 3 more months.
Yeah.
And it's still dark. And December 21st, we start gaining daylight, but it's like 2 seconds a day. You know, it's not anything that's like noticeable.
Yeah.
So the number one thing that I make sure and do is exercise. That's just, the human body was just designed to function on exercise. It needs it to survive. Our mental stability needs exercise. So getting out for a walk, going out for a ski, you know, there's a lot more ways to do it, but just making sure that you get out even in the dark. You just got to do it, and got to get that fresh air, got to get those endorphins up. You know, if you're a gym person, do that. I used to go to the gym. I hate the gym. The idea of standing somewhere and not going anywhere, or walking on a treadmill and not going anywhere, just drives me nuts.
Yeah.
But getting outside is so important. And honestly, it makes the winter go by as well. And it's so freaking beautiful out there too. Like, when it's snowy or when it's cold and the hoarfrost is, you know, on the trees and it's growing, it's just really nice. And it just gives us an opportunity to go out there and to see what's out there. But the second thing that I will say that has helped me is growing my community. I am a firm believer that we're not meant to be alone. Isolation is a bad thing, even though, you know, kind of the tongue-in-cheek Alaskan dream is to, you know, come up here and live alone and have a cabin and have a dog, you know, but that's not reality, and it's not good for you. We're meant to socialize with people, and we're meant to have conversations, and, you know, we're meant to, I think, this is just my personal belief, but I think that we're meant to just to have community. And so participating in community things, finding out what's going on, you know, go out and get a drink with your friends, be intentional about plans, do something stupid like plan a game night, you know, but just being intentional about being around people is the second thing that I've done. So exercise and being around people helps me get through the winters. And I do struggle every winter.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever watch the show Alone?
I have.
I I had never watched it. I haven't even really heard of it. I don't have like regular TV, and I'm not in the habit of watching a lot of TV, which I think is good. Sometimes mm-hmm. I'll find a show and kind of do that, but Alone was never on my radar. And my wife and I watched the one season where they try to get 100 days.
And that's the only season that I watched too.
I bet it's very popular among Alaskans. Yeah, how long do you think you would last? And maybe there's two questions here. How long do you think you would last before you'd kind of really start to lose track of reality? And then how long after that would you like need to check out, go home?
Yeah. Well, obviously I'd like to say that I would last 100 days because, you know, that's just the way that I am. I don't know how long I would last. I think that if I was prepared and I had a plan, because, you know, I tend to be a planner. I hate researching, but I like planning. Riddle me that. I don't know. I would, you know, if I could plan to have a good shelter, I'm good at making fire. You know, if I can have fire and shelter, you know, I don't know. I was really gunning for that blonde girl to win that got the fight. Like, I wanted her to win so bad. You know, I just thought she was so good, and I was so inspired, and I was like, I can do that. I can trap rabbits. I can live on rabbits for a whole 100 days.
Yeah. She was great because she was so grateful, and she just had this great demeanor. And
she did.
It seemed like she was, from the start, maybe a little, I don't want to say off, but quirky. Just kind of had a unique personality for what was coming, which I thought was pretty cool. And then Roland, yeah. Was it Roland? Was he's the guy that
was,
made Rock
House?
Yeah,
the guy from Alaska.
Dude, that guy was, he'd still be out there if he could.
Yeah. I will say, like, I already alluded to the fact that I have to have community. Like, it's so important to me. I don't know if I could make it.
No. I wonder if it would be something stupid like, you know, I lost my fire starter, I lost my hatchet or something like that. And I'd be like, oh man, well, burger sounds good. Let's go.
Yeah, for sure.
Or if, you know, the shelter thing would be super interesting. I think I would like to build a shelter. Some of my buddies, when we were in middle school and then even beginning high school, like we chopped down a couple of trees, notched some logs and made a legit fort and hung a seine mm-hmm. net up in some trees and hung up a little basketball hoop. So after school, we'd play netball and it'd be like 2-on-2 and you could tackle. We're just running around in the same net that's hanging up above tree or in these trees and just yep. manufacture fun. And so,
oh, that's how I grew up.
Oh, it's so, so great. But yeah, being alone for a while, I wonder, and it would be super annoying to videotape yourself. And then, I don't know, bacon cheeseburger would just start, or deer backstrap or something. What do you think would be the food that might be the biggest haunter of you?
Oh geez. Probably like pizza. Mm. I don't know, like I'm a real big pizza fan. Or tacos. Anything Mexican, honestly. Like just some good tacos.
Well, if you're ever on the show, yeah. You could probably say, oh, I could really go for a St. Elias Brewing pizza right about now, and then see if you yeah. can get like free pizza for life or something like that for the free advertising.
Yeah, support local. Hey, I'm already trying to do that. It's not working.
yeah, that's funny. Well, we're about at an hour here. We'll give you a chance for any sort of parting thought or ideas, or where can people find you or anything. What do you got?
Oh, for sure. Well, people can find me at Alaska Outdoor Girl, all one word, alaskaoutdoorgirl.com. I'm going to be working on some cool stuff with a local tourism outfit and doing some learning some guiding and stuff this summer. So follow along with those adventures. I have a lot of people that message me, like, where to go, what to do. So I try to get back to as many of those as possible. So if you want to shoot me an email or shoot me a direct message, you can email me at info@alaskaoutdoorgirl.com or just fill in a little form on the website. You know, I'm just trying to show people Alaska and showcase the outdoors and kind of pave the way for women who are wanting to get into the outdoors. And yeah, I'm super fun time talking to you, Jeff. Hope I get to meet you and Abby. It'd be fun.
Yeah, hopefully we'll make another trip up there. And Jack and Brandon and Daniel, the guys, they've been talking about moose hunts and things like that. So maybe, I don't think we're going to be invited to like the moose camp, but you know, something up there would be sweet. It's cool to have contacts in a different part of the state.
Oh, you guys should try to make it up to the they're doing that game meat party.
Oh, I know. Daniel was talking about that, and that would be so fun to go up there. We just bought some. We're in the process of buying some land. We're going to start building now that prices are going to go up. You know, we planned that super well. But yeah, it's not going to work out, but it'd be super cool to head up there. But maybe next, maybe one of these summers.
Maybe next year.
Head up there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, all right. Thanks. Well, looking forward to listening to the next podcast too.
Cool. Thank you for being on. I really appreciate it. And thanks for all you're doing for the state. And I'm looking forward to maybe getting some skis and, adventuring.
Yeah, let me know how it goes.
Will do. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Bye.
Bye.